Okay, I'd like to ask you to come to order, please, for the Finance Committee for Rancho Murrieta Community Services District. This is our regular meeting, February 13, 2025. It is 10:07 a.m. Our Personnel Committee ran a little over, so we're starting just a little bit late. I'm Director Steve Booth. With me is Director John Merchant on the committee. Also present, our Director of Finance and Operations, Mark Matulich, and our District Secretary, Clerk of the Board, Amelia Wilder. Next item is comments from the public. If you wish to speak during comments from the public or would like to comment regarding an item appearing on the meeting agenda, please complete a public comment card and submit to the Board Secretary prior to public comments. Amelia, that last sentence needs to be taken off of this paragraph for future reference. It says we will hold all comments until the public comment section.
I see, yes, sir.
Because we have the comments for the public now at the top. So are there any comments from the public at this time on items not on the agenda?
No, sir.
Okay. There being none, we'll move then to item number three, which is the finance report. Mr. Matulich.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Amelia, let's start with, we'll just start with results from operations. And this is through, and you can go to
Do you want to go to the spreadsheet?
Just go to the budget actual report, and then I'll just go through the verbiage. So this is results, financial results for operations for fiscal year 24-25 through January 31st, 2025. So the first 7 months of the year. So for the first 7 months of the year, the district had a net operating loss of $93,000, which was primarily due to major unexpected repairs. And so some examples of those are in the water fund, there was a major leak to a 33-inch pipe that is responsible for drawing water out of the river and putting it into the system, and that repair was a $255,000 repair. And then in the sewer fund, there were two major unexpected repairs there, and I'm highlighting these because these are, you know, we budget for repairs. Repairs happen. It's no secret that the infrastructure here at the district is getting older and is prone to needing repair. But these are really excessive, expensive, kind of out of the ordinary repairs. And so under the sewer fund, there is a recycled water pipe that goes across the Yellow Bridge. And that pipe needed a pretty significant repair, and that was about $35,000. And then there was a repair that was required related to the drying beds, and that entailed rewiring electrical going from a junction box to the drying beds. That span of wiring was about 250 feet, and trenching that out and rewiring all of that and updating the electrical box, that came to $28,000. And currently, if a project or a big item like this is not part of the capital improvement plan, these type of repairs will come out of operating funds. So what we would like to start doing is bringing these big major repairs that have a significant impact on operations to this committee and possibly have this committee recommend to the board using reserve money or restricted funds to cover these type of repairs. And for example, for the repairs that we've noted here, restricted funds can be used to cover the cost of projects like this or major repairs like this that are unexpected. And it would remove those impacts from operating results and show them as a use of restricted reserve funds. So per Department of Water Resources, The cost of repairing the 33-inch pipe, that $255,000 repair, can be covered by the $1.3 million SB 170 grant funds that the district received several years ago. And the major repairs that we noted in the sewer fund, those are the type of things that can be covered with the replacement reserve funds, which is that $14 a month that's on everybody's sewer, the sewer portion of their bill. And so if the district were to use these funds to cover the repairs noted above, year to date through January 31st, fiscal year 24-25 results from operations would be a net income of $225,000. So that just shows the impact of these kind of things.
So if, before you move on, Mark, if I may ask a couple of questions in regard to that piece. When the board approved those two repairs that you've addressed, or two types of repairs, did we authorize to pay out of reserve funds for those, or was it coming out of operational budget?
You know, I think it came up as just a... It definitely came up, and I think it would. I think the conversation was more like, could we use reserve funds for this, or could we pay this out of operating? And I think the response was yes. And this would just be more formalizing, like, hey, here's a list of things outside the CIP that the board or the finance committee, and possibly the board, may want to consider using the reserve funds or restricted funds for. And then everybody's on the same page. And this is kind of part of that process of just moving the quality of the accounting information and the information forward as we get more organized.
And it would be best for us to have that discussion up front as these items arise. Mm-hmm. But for purposes of the repair to the 33-inch pipe and the two sewer utility-related, would you propose to this committee that we use SB 170 grant money, that we ask the board to approve SB 170 grant funds for the 33-inch pipe repair, and that we tap sewer fund reserves for the others?
Yes.
I would support that, John, going to the board.
Yeah, I would too. There's a couple of things. First of all, the narrative on the Calero River pipe started out as a fix and got uglier by the day. I mean, we didn't understand what we were dealing with when we first talked about it. It was carved in under the dam, and it was hard to get to, and Travis did come back at one point and say, this is going to be a lot more than we thought. It's almost like if you got a 50-year-old pipe that runs 2 miles, it should almost be, from a LUMA standpoint, a CIP item anyway.
Right, right.
I mean, so I have no problem with this particular item, nor do I have a problem, however you want to work it, if we get these exceptions where we want to convert these, we could take them one at a time and once a month, whatever they are. If we got one, bring it, and we'll talk about it, and we can take that back to the board and do it. Or I guess, as like you said, as we get more sophisticated with an analysis of our sewer system, maybe there's a way we're building in X percentage of that as a CIP, understanding that we're going to do that much work
right
every year. Yeah, so yeah,
and the CIP generally is funded out of reserves. So
yes, yeah. Yes, it is.
Okay, so Amelia, can we add this as an action item to our already extensive agenda for next week?
Yes.
Okay.
Mark, please proceed.
Yeah,
you're going to talk
you
about security fund next.
Yes. So the security fund had a net operating loss of $75,000 after the allocation of $168,000 in administrative overhead expense. And so what that means is, security had a net operating income of $94,000 before the allocation of administrative overhead. Okay, and that's in fiscal year 24-25, the administrative overhead allocation rate to the security fund is 14%. So to give some context for that, and so The security fund is projected to have an overall net operating loss of about $79,000 in fiscal 24-25. And this is on the amended budget, and that is about the amount that we had budgeted in that amended budget for that $10 annual barcode renewal fee. So postponing that fee, but we have the extra services, but that's what we're anticipating to be the loss for the year at this point in time.
And we have on the agenda for next Wednesday an action item to address that. I'm assuming that your proposal would be that we amend the security budget to cover that deficit as opposed to making adjustments to our staff.
Yes, that will be the staff's recommendation is to go ahead and cover that just to keep things going. We kind of went through a transition that was costly, you know, to hire people, to look at policies and procedures, to transition from kind of the way the security department here had been limping along for several years and try to get back to that full coverage posture. And I know there have been hiccups along the way, and I definitely appreciate the feedback that we've received on those, and we've addressed those, and we're working through it. And I feel like we're kind of at that point where security is about to have its moment, you know, and back to that full coverage posture and come out of this transition period and go forward in a very positive way and provide those additional services to the community. And I would hate to hit the pause button on that for 3 months, which would entail unraveling all of that potential success.
And the most obvious source of funding to amend the budget and cover that deficit would be from our unrestricted property tax revenue, correct?
That's correct. That is correct.
And so we also have on the agenda for next Wednesday an analysis from our general counsel in response to questions, I think, that were asked by board member or members at the last meeting about our use of property tax money in view of recommendations made by the grand jury a couple of years ago. I would be prepared when this item comes up on the agenda next Wednesday to support transferring property tax revenue to the security budget to amend it to cover this shortfall for the remainder of this fiscal year, and then we'll work on security funding for next budget year in the budget process. John?
Agree. And I've seen the legal opinion, and there's no reason we can't do that.
Right. Okay.
So let's do it.
Okay.
Okay.
And that, like I said, that's already agendized as an action item for next week. So, but this committee will be recommending that we transfer property tax money to the security budget and amend the budget to cover this deficit.
Okay.
All right, next.
Thank you.
Mark?
So as we just continue down as we do, so that's operations. And now we'll go into non-operating revenues and expenses. And one thing I hope to add to this tan-colored section here is use of reserve and restricted money. That's something that has not appeared here, and this would be potentially the appropriate spot for that. And so, for instance, these items that we talked about here, using SB 170 funds and using replacement reserve funds, we would take those out of the operating expenses in the blue section above. Instead of a $93,000 loss from operations, we would show a $225,000 positive there. And then you would see those items down here in this tan section as a use of those monies. And we'd be able to tell you know, what those are specifically. So, and again, I mean, that's part of our whole effort here to get organized and get our arms around this information. And that this would be, you know, our next big step in that process that we're working on layering in.
Can I ask you, Mark, please. And that's kind of the question I had when I was reviewing this the other day in my head. We actually we actually get a subsection in here, which is essentially a P&L for CIP. In other words, I mean, we understand at the beginning of the process what we've budgeted for the year, and we will month by month have a rolling accounting of how much of that CIP we have eaten into.
That's correct. So this again, and so we do have a section here now that's currently doing that, but this is a part of the accounting here that has been a little bit lacking in the past,
and it's hard to find.
So we're trying to get it. We're trying to come up with a good coding scheme for it and everything else. But if you look at that green section at the very bottom, that's where all the expenditures against the CIP project should be going. Okay, and I believe that's for the most part complete. I know every check we cut out of here is reflected on this report, but you know, if somebody codes an invoice wrong or forgets to put the CIP number on it, which does happen, it would end up in operations and operating. Right. So and then that takes like a deep dive into the detail to find those things. But we're getting to the point with our accounting where this report used to take probably about a week to put together, okay, because things were in such disarray. Now this specific one took about 3 hours, okay, because we've got it, we're tightening things up, people are getting trained, we're setting up procedures, people are getting used to the procedures and following them properly, right? So we're getting there. But John, to your point, the spending on the CIP projects should be coded in such a way that they will appear in this green section at the bottom. Okay.
And the other thing, I guess it's and it just came up, and it's the first I've thought of it. I think it's relevant to understand at some point too, if we have grant money, X amount for X grants, 1, 2, 10, however many we have. I mean, an accounting of where we are. If we're going to use SB 170, well,
yeah.
What did we get it for, and how much of it have we spent, and how much of it do we have left in this particular case after we pay for the quarter of a million for the pipe?
No, then that's great, and that's definitely something. Again, we're trying to get our arms around. The district right now has used recently 3 grants. SB 170 is $1.3 million. I believe that money came in here in 2022. I'm getting ready to put a final report together on it, and I believe putting some of it against this pipe, 33-inch pipe, I believe the district can demonstrate that it's used it all. And so then I would just need to report it on. The folks that we're working with on this at Department of Water Resources are great. They're very helpful. And in a call several months ago when this big repair came up, we mentioned, hey, if we have a very large unexpected repair like this, would that also be allowable under the grant? And they said, yes, it would. So this is now bringing this to you now as part of getting ready to put that final accounting together for them. And that should close that grant out. And when we do that, we'll come and report it to the board. And what I could do is I could put it together and bring it to the committee so you guys can review it and bless it, and then we can take it to the board, and I could submit it if you feel that's more appropriate, or I could just take care of it. Right now, the projects will be this pipe, 255 Granley's, which is finished now, and then the conversions in the water and wastewater plant.
Yeah, and those were already conditioned. Yeah, and they were already.
Those were
built into the grant.
Right,
and that was kind of like, and you know, I understand that one because I was in on it when we got the money from Cooley and the whole bit. But I don't know what other grants we have.
Yeah, I mean,
so
I really don't know.
That's the biggest one. The other two are OES, when there was the big storms here back in
2023.
When we had the flood, you mean?
Yeah, when we had the flood.
Okay. There were seven individual allotments of money from FEMA OES coming down here. Amelia and I just did, and Amelia mainly spearheaded this because she had been working with Michael Fritchie on it during the time that this was happening. Mm-hmm. We just submitted the final packet for that. And so that should be completely closed out and done. There was no difference from the very specific things that were to be done with those grant monies at the time the district got that grant. So that's closed and done. The only other one is Michael had applied for a couple of grants, or one grant, but it has a couple of years on it, to cover the cost of implementing SB 1383. And so the first year of that was a $25,000 grant. That's been reported on and should be closed. And then there's a $75,000 grant that has a reporting deadline coming up. But this is just related to the cost of implementing SB 1383. And really the only cost the district has related to that is what we can peel out of our contract with Cal Waste. And there's an appendix to an amended contract that spells out what they're doing for SB 1383. And I spoke with them and they gave me, you know, an amount that I could apply to each pickup every month, right? So what I'm doing is I'm taking their monthly bill and I'm applying this factor, this SB 1383 factor to that, and that's what we'll report on.
So I think I would appreciate just having a report to this committee next month, status report on the grants, really as a precursor to then sharing it with the board at large. I don't see that as needing any action by this committee or recommendations, but it would be, I think, enlightening, and especially it would be helpful as other items come before us, or before improvements, which John also sits on, for repair or maintenance, to know that there may be alternate funds out there. That way he would be apprised fully of any potential grant money that might be available as well on that other committee.
Yeah, and the other part of that is it helps everyone, I think, understand, okay, that this grant money is available as part of that. And I'm talking about doing something from a reporting standpoint of like two or three lines. I mean, I don't want,
yeah.
You know, I don't sure. want the Webster's Dictionary here. but to know what we started with, what we've spent, what we have remaining, and if there's a closure date, to know in our head, you know, hey, we got 170 here, and this thing closes in 4 months, and we got $68,000 left. Well, let's go invent something to spend the $68,000.
Yeah, I can tell you right now, all the grant money is accounted for and spent. But I can put that report together. There's nothing on deck that would be available. But I do think, you know, we have many initiatives that we're working on here, but there's a lot of grant money out there for a lot of different things, and you know, as we've talked in the past about, the district has a lot of needs with this infrastructure and everything. It would not, you know, it might behoove us to explore the possibility.
I mean, we had this discussion on Tuesday.
Yes.
Where if we don't do an urban water master plan, we are crossed out of a lot of it.
Well, and that's what I was just gonna suggest, is based on that conversation that I overheard Tuesday, I think it would be good to set up a template for a report, and we probably ought to, when other things settle a little bit, Mark, we probably ought to have someone looking for potential grants. Yeah. I know there was some discussion about some grant that GM Morris was interested in, although I don't think there was majority support on the board for some of the things that she was suggesting that grant money might be used for. I don't know what the status of that application is. That would be nice to know as well at the next finance committee meeting, because I think there were a couple of projects. The one that she was, I think, advancing as a primary wasn't, I don't think, garnering support from the majority of the board, but a couple of others were. So I think it'd be good to know what the status of that is. And then again, as John just mentioned, as we move forward and are going to have to develop an urban water management plan, it would be good to have that in place already as we seek outside funding.
Okay, great.
All right. Anything else on your finance report?
Nothing else on the finance report.
Do we have any public comment on item three?
Richard Gears.
Mr. Gears, would you approach the podium, please?
Regarding SB 170, I was under the impression there are projects that are approved because we had that grant money, basically because it was free money, and that was a major component of that. And my understanding was those projects consumed all that money. And in fact, the estimates came in higher, and there wasn't enough to cover them. Am I wrong? I thought all that money was planned for.
So, Mark, if you know off the cuff the answer to that, otherwise we'll ask Mr. Gears to wait for the report that you provide to us next month.
So what I can say to that is there were three projects that were proposed that would have spent all the 1.3. Granley's and then the two conversions, the water plant and the wastewater plant. We've been talking with the granting agency because those two, well, all three of those projects, I think, at one time were anticipated to be done in 2021 or 2022, and they hadn't been done. And so the clock is running on when this money needs to be spent or returned. And so we had a conversation with Department of Water Resources, which is administering this grant, and they mentioned the way that the grant was written for the district specifically is there's some latitude on what the money can be spent on. So we mentioned this large repair to this pipe, $255,000, and they said, yes, that's something you can use. So this is more the proposal to use SB 170 money on this pipe is more of an effort to go ahead and expend the grant money so it doesn't have to be returned, and expend it on things that we already know they're going, that they've approved.
And that would then require us to find alternate funding to fill the gap on those other conversion projects.
Yeah,
so Granley's came in below budget, did it not?
But
it
the
did.
Other one, the other one.
So I look at it like this. Over. I look at it like this. The repair to that pipe is coming out of water. Two of the three projects on the 170 approved list originally are water projects. So it's like the shell game. It's like
one pocket to the other.
You got it. So the idea is let's spend the money when we know we can spend it for sure within the confines of the timing on the grant. And I think the big issue is those projects were initially planned in, I think, 22,
mm-hmm.
and then those conversion projects, I think, were a bigger undertaking than initially thought. And then I think the Granley's project just was delayed, possibly for I'm not sure why.
The Granley's was delayed, and the plant project was
they were way
more money than. Yeah. I mean, we had 15 minutes to make up a number.
Right.
Literally, I'm not kidding. It was 15 minutes.
So this is an effort to just expend that money and then for sure have it benefit the district rather than potentially fall short on timing and then have to return it. So that's what that's about.
Answer your question, sir?
Yeah, but I have a comment.
Sure.
As a member of the public and a ratepayer, I'm kind of troubled that these projects are approved, at least in some part, based on the assumption that it's free money. And then, no. 2 years later, that free money is going to be used for something else. And these projects are still approved, and where's the money going to come from? It's going to come from my rates. It's no longer free money. So that assumption that it was free money was part of the decision-making process. And back then, if it hadn't been free money, I might have said something about it.
But every one of those projects was on the books and scheduled to be performed even before the money was invented. The money was invented when Ken Cooley called me and said we have a state budget surplus and we want to give you money because if we don't give it to you, the money goes back into the general fund. So we said, sure, we'll take the money. And then it was a balancing act among these projects. The Granley's project was approved. Not only was it approved when Ed Kraus and I talked about it 20 years ago. Okay. This one was a project that was on the books because we were, I believe it was part of the conversion, if I remember right.
Yes.
And it was a matter of our mistake was that we asked for $1.5 million. We should ask for $3 million. I mean, we had no idea.
Right.
But you're right. And what we've just talked about is I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is we're going to come up with a systematic way to present this on a monthly basis, because we have not, at least in my mind, we have not really effectively tracked grants. I mean, especially now as a member of the Improvements Committee, I ought to at least know that the grant exists, and I ought to know how much of it we have left to spend and when we need to spend it by, so we just don't cough it up and give it back.
Okay, I mean,
I agree.
It's a little troubling.
I understand your perspective.
Yeah.
Appreciate
okay.
it.
Yeah.
The other thing is security. What I saw in the packet was basically a shell game. I mean, there was these expense allocation not too long ago. It was cut back a lot for security. And now we're talking about cutting it back even more. And why? Because to balance the budget. And because of that, the expense is going to water. And what's that mean? My water rates go up. And what's that mean? My water rates go up to pay for your gate. I don't think that's acceptable.
I
think you're jumping. You must be talking about the proposed budget.
I'm talking about what Matt had in the his report. Maybe it was in the budget. Maybe it's not. Maybe it was in the budget.
So there is a proposal in the proposed budget to fine-tune the administrative allocations. You recall that a couple of years ago, the allocation percentages were very different. And shortly after Mark came on board, he did an analysis and said, hey, we're really overcharging in some places, undercharging in others. And the board adopted a retroactive adjustment, actually, of those allocations. And we've been following that new allocation for the last, I think, two budget cycles. What Mark is proposing to the board to consider in this next budget is some fine-tuning of that allocation, which would result in reducing by a couple of percentage points, if I recall correctly, the allocation to security, which he and the staff have represented to us more closely represents what our overhead in terms of IT, personnel, everything else that isn't on the ground goes to security. Some of the reallocation to water has to do with how the staffing between the two plants and the infrastructure work. But yes, there is a proposal to fine-tune that allocation. And if you looked at the budget, what Mark hasn't covered in this meeting yet, but I did look at the documents, he's proposing a 3.5% increase in the water rates for next year. And part of that, I suppose, is a reflection of the reallocation of the administrative overhead, and part of that reflects just the increased cost of doing business. But I think there was a decrease in some aspects of our operational budgets.
Right. Water actually stayed the same at a 52% allocation, and wastewater went down, I believe it's 4% in its overhead allocation. So the two areas that the fine-tuning happened in were drainage, which previously was just getting 3%, which was pretty low for any function, and then the solid waste, which actually is, even though we pay a third-party hauler, it's pretty labor-intensive for our folks up here in the front. They field a lot of calls. I think a disproportionately high amount of their calls are related to the trash and recycling and compost pickups.
There was somebody at the counter yesterday as I was leaving the building.
Right. And so we bumped both of those. Well, you can see the fine-tuning took those up a little bit. I think they're each 7%. We'll see it when we get there, which is still pretty low for an allocation rate. So really, water stayed the same, and wastewater actually went down. And those are the two parts of your bill that the year-over-year rate increases could be variable.
Yeah. And the reallocations to drainage and security only are affected by the 2% annual increase allowed under the measure that created those.
Correct, yes.
So over, I'm just trying to, I got something for you, Richard, in a minute. What the annual budget this year, okay, adding in the overhead, what's the security budget? Okay, I'm roughly, $1.5 million. What are we at?
Hold on, I don't want to give you the wrong number. Let me. Yeah, you got it.
$1.5 million. Okay,
just for that, and then 272 overhead allocation.
So based on that allocation, and I don't want to get yet into this. Well, overhead goes back to water, and then I pay for it. Out of $1.5 million, I think the contribution of the village is $17,760. Annually,
plus the airport, plus the commercial, plus Murrieta Gardens too.
No, I'm talking about off the security tax. Your bill collectively is about $18,000.
Okay. Yep,
out of $1.5 million.
Okay,
and I understand your frustration with the allocations. I mean, I ran a company with 6 locations and 2 distribution centers. I owned it, and. I mean, this confuses me, but in reality, there's a balance here, and that equates to the Murrieta Gardens as well, and we keep going back to, well, for every dollar that gets moved here, I'm paying for your gate. I mean, you're paying 1 or 2% here of what we're spending. I mean. And that's $1,480 a month to service 190 homes.
Yeah. Well, it comes across pretty suspicious that the security budget is off by this month, and then, oh, conveniently, you adjust the expense allocation to cover that?
No. Here's what we adjusted. We did an independent survey with a consultant.
Back about five years ago,
yeah. That got us in a hell of a lot of trouble because we started allocating security at like 30%, 35% of the overhead, and it turned the security budget upside down, and that turned into a revolt, and that turned into what we got now, and everything to this point has been to reduce service. Okay, to correspond with the amount of money we take in with the tax. Well, we're not going to do that anymore. But the way we're going to compensate for that, to stay out of the business of grabbing on to unrestricted funds, is we're going to use a barcode fee to pay for that. That doesn't apply to you.
I know that doesn't.
Okay, so you're staying at the same level until, okay, we were to toss out security and not do it anymore, and guess what? The overhead allocation for the entire district stays the same because he doesn't go out the door, the GM doesn't go out the door, Eric doesn't go out the door. All we do is reallocate the overhead again, okay, back into water, which you'll pay for. So what I think where we're going here is your rates essentially based on the 2% security tax increase. Your $1,480 a month is going to go up by 2%. I understand that maybe all this money in everybody's head may not be in the same bucket, but your $1,480 a month as a village is going up by 2%. And out of $1.5 million that we're allocating to security, you guys are paying $18,000. That's a hell of a deal. I mean,
don't have a gate.
Reducing it to a conversation outside the public sector. You got a hell of a deal here. In my opinion, I'm sorry.
I'm talking about this reallocation of expenses, you know, $25,000 that Mark's proposing. And what I'm saying is it's kind of suspicious that that reallocation from security to wherever it goes to is just enough to cover this budget imbalance. And I'm thinking, well,
what covers the what covers
I'm not tracking because Mark just reported in this fiscal year we are short $79,000 based on the commitment that we made anticipating the barcode increases going into place. So for this current budget year, we have to come up with $79,000-$80,000 to cover that deficit. And earlier, John, you and Mark coming out of the private sector, you talk about P&L, profit and loss. This is government, it's surplus and deficit. But in any event, so for this budget year, we need to make an amendment, and we're going to propose to the board next Wednesday to take that $79,000 or whatever it is out of the unrestricted property tax money to cover the increased cost for security for the remainder of this budget year. And then Mark has got us engaged in an overall budget exercise, which includes the reallocation of administrative allocation that you addressed earlier. It also will include a proposal to increase the barcode fees. So only those that have barcodes, which theoretically are only those that are coming through the gate on a regular basis to get to home or business, will see that increase. And to be able to maintain our current staffing levels, which we're calling full staffing. It still may be a diminishment from what we had 3 years ago. I think we had 13 full-time staff at one level, and now we're down to 12 or something. But in any event, I we'll bring this up at budget. Certainly, I recommend that you raise your objections there for the entire board to consider, and we're going to have to make some hard decisions. You will next Wednesday hear from me a report on the activity of the ad hoc committee. And part of that is John and I, who are serving on that ad hoc committee, have renewed discussions about alternative ways that we might address security in the near and long term. And we're looking at several different alternatives that may or may not completely change the landscape of how or whether CSD provides security services.
Okay, well, that'll be interesting.
That's a little bit of a preview for a very brief discussion in next Wednesday's meeting.
And just physically, the last comment, Richard, is that in the $79,000, we had a conversation right here at the board where the gentleman to my left said, well, I guess we got to fire all those people. And my opinion, we ain't firing anybody. And we took the money out. And we increase the staff, and as a result of that, that $79,000 that falls through, which costs you on an annual basis probably about $2, okay, improved your service because now you have patrol that we didn't have before. But yes, the gates are benefiting as well, but there are now people driving around in CSD automobiles that weren't driving around a couple of months ago.
Well,
so
I've seen
improvements. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks.
Okay, I didn't mean this discussion to go on that.
No, I'm glad. Yeah. I just wanted.
It's instructive.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure you knew where at least my head was in the process.
What I was coming from is that when you, I guess it was the budget. I'm ahead of time here, but the overhead allocation was changed by some amount. It seemed like it was $25,000 or somewhere around there.
Well, the overhead allocation has steadily decreased based on the fact that we are administrating at the top level now as what Mark has plugged in at a sergeant level. And for generations, we had a chief of police. Okay.
But noteworthy also is the fine tuning includes all five utilities because, as Mark explained earlier, he is proposing to increase the allocation for drainage and
solid waste,
which we're only at 2%, and he's going, that doesn't cover anything, and based on the experience that he now can record based on front office activity, he's proposing to increase those, I think, from 2 to 7.
Okay.
And there's still some refinement going on between water and wastewater, because when I first came on this board, everything basically was being charged to water. And in reality, we have two different plants. They operate different schedules and different work during different times of the year. So Mark continues to try to fine-tune so we get it right, or as close as we can, as we move forward. He's going to wrap these audits up for us in a couple of months, and we're all going to have a much better picture of exactly where your money's going, where my money's going, where John's money's going in terms of what CSD collects. So it's an important dynamic, and I encourage you to continue to have these discussion points with us, because this is oftentimes some of the impetus for those adjustments.
Okay. You know, I have one, and that you can sit, Richard. But I have a comment.
Thank you.
This is probably the most sophisticated thing I will ever propose. But if you take an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper for 31 days, and you divide it into 5 columns, and you give it to the folks up at the front desk, and we categorize. You make up the categories. There's no more than like 8. Solid waste, security, a leak, reporting. I don't even know what they would be, but the folks at the front desk know what kind of calls they get. And just take a piece of paper, and every time we get a call for 31 days, just put an X in a box. You don't need to put this in Excel. I'd really be interested in knowing, and we say these things and we've been saying them for years. Yeah, we get a hell of a lot of calls about garbage, or how do I get another can, or they didn't pick up my garbage, or why am I paying this much for my can?
Just, where's my $10 refund?
Yeah, all we want, and we don't even want to get sophisticated. All I want to know at the end of 31 days is how many calls were for garbage, how many calls for security, and that it may tell us something, it may not, but it won't cost us anything to do it. So let's try it.
All right.
Sure.
All right. So I think we've already kicked off some discussion on item 4, which is the first pass on the draft budget.
Sure.
Mark?
Yeah, we'll move to that.
Budget. Next slide.
Yeah, we can just start there. Actually, will you just go to, I just want to summarize this, then let's just dive in. That's fine.
Okay.
You can high base this.
Okay, so actually go back to my Word document if you would, Amelia.
One moment. This guy.
Yeah, to the last page. So this is just a real, just kind of high level summary here of what we're looking at for the 25-26 budget, and staff is proposing underwater a 3.5% increase to the base rate, no increase to usage rate, no increase to the reserve rate for sewer, 3.5% to the base rate, no increase to the reserve rate for solid waste. Cal Waste is increasing their rates by 3.85%, and they're calling that an inflation increase tied to the consumer price index. And then CSD is increasing its franchise fee by 50 cents. And the franchise fee is just answering the phones, all the administrative stuff that goes with, you know, billing, keying in the payments, administering that program.
Having a director drive over and pay the check.
That could also be, yes. And for drainage, that's the Measure J 2%. For security, that's the Measure J 2%. And then we talked about staff is reproposing the annual barcode renewal fee of $10 a year per active barcode. And I just also want to note that the plan is to assess that on the monthly utility bill in January, when typically the water usage rates are at their lowest, or that's among the lowest months for that part of the bill, and so hopefully that will help smooth out the impact of that fee. So it won't, you know, if we were to assess it in July or August, that might result in an abnormally high bill in that month. And so that fee will be assessed in January.
Mark, on the solid waste, Cal Waste proposal to increase 3.85%. I haven't looked at that contract to see specifically what the language says, but I will note that for the 12 months ending February 2025, the CPI index was only 2.8% increase. It was 3% in January. If you take out food and energy, it was 3.1 the end of January. So I'm wondering how, and I know that throughout all of 2024, it ran right around or just below 3%. So how do they get 3.85%?
So they, and I can make a copy and pass this around, but they actually provided a report where they're citing Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they are saying CPI all urban consumers current series, and it looks like they're using I'd have to go back and recalculate this, but it looks like they're using February 2024 to January 2025. And that's how they've arrived. The change between those two points in time using the CPI All Urban Consumers Index, that's how they're coming up with the 3.85%.
That was 3%. I'm looking on it online. It was 3%.
Let's see.
So when we have that discussion with them in the near future,
yeah,
we need to have a discussion about this as well.
Okay.
I mean, if there's something in the contract that I'm overlooking, but all urban consumers through January was 3%.
Usually, yeah, and usually in any CPI reference in a contract, I mean, it specifically states.
So this is what
the document being used.
This is what they've done, and we can go back and revisit. But they've taken 2 points in time on that index. They've taken the February 2024 number, which is 298.751. They've taken the January 2025 number, which is 310.239. And the percentage increase from that February number to the January number is 3.85%. I'm not saying that that's right.
Which index are they looking at? They're clearly not looking at all U.S. cities.
No. All urban consumers. CPI, all urban consumers. The two numbers that are highlighted on here are the two numbers.
Yeah, but the all urban consumers, there are various indices. There's an all cities. You can do one specifically for San Francisco.
Sure.
You can do one for West Coast. And the U.S. city average, and I would expect it maybe to be a little lower than California.
Okay.
But the U.S. city average. So I'm
yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is, area U.S. city.
We can revisit it. We can talk to them when we have that other conversation, as you noted, and question it. That's just how they came up with the number.
Right.
So I understand I've negotiated contracts for 50 years.
Yes.
Using CPI, and yeah, you have your point in time and in a 12-month period, and you take the difference, and what's that percentage?
Yeah.
I can check their math, I suppose.
I just redid it. It works. I just redid it.
Yeah, well.
So, but again, I'm not, I agree with you. It's worth looking at the contract and making sure that they're following that. And then, you know, as you mentioned, we're going to try to have a meeting with them related to the other item. And, see if we can maybe knock that down a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be rough. They're getting killed. I think they're having a tough time. But I did point out to you that we're a big chunk in their business.
Okay.
Huge chunk.
Yeah, I'm going to want to check those indices because I'm getting different information online going right to BLS.
Okay. No, that's fair.
I mean, like I said, I've done this for 50 years.
Sure. Yeah.
Got it.
Okay.
For sure.
All right.
Yep.
So let's follow up on that discussion then.
Interesting. Part of that conversation would be, okay, how do you arrive at our geographic area as being classified as all urban? You know, we are not, you know, the Marina District.
Well, but that's why using all U.S. cities is better than focusing in on Los Angeles or San Francisco or...
Right.
And again, over the years that I negotiated labor contracts, we would look at what a relevant market was. And, you know, a rural community, we would tend to use the all U.S. cities because it was a closer approximation of their demographic and economics. If I was negotiating a contract at the fire district in American Canyon, I'd be looking at the Bay Area.
Right.
And it's going to be a different number by, you know, tenths or hundredths of a percentage point, but not 8/10. So we need to take, I need to pull up that index.
Okay.
Because, like I said, the report I'm seeing says 3% for all U.S. cities through January, which is exactly what they claim to have looked at. So we need to follow up on that just to verify, because that seemed high to me when I saw it.
Okay, will do.
Thank you, Mark.
Yep.
What else you got?
Okay, Amelia, if you just pull the presentation up and we'll go through this. Yeah, if you would.
There you go.
And then we'll kind of run through. So that's the highlights with the rate increases. You know, as we click through, you can go to the next slide, please. So again, this is just what our discussion's going to center on today.
And this is the presentation you
for the board
propose to give to the board?
Yes.
Okay. And I've already reviewed this. John, I suppose you have as well.
Yeah.
So is there anything particular, Mark, you want to point out, or John, if you have any questions? Otherwise, I think we can kind of streamline this.
I was going to say I want to talk. I have some questions on reserves more than I do on
okay. Well, I'll give you a streamlined version, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Let's do that.
Okay. So the goals, the overarching goals that we're trying to accomplish here are having a balanced operating budget. And so that is every fund is supposed to operate as its own separate business, and that's part of the fine-tuning that we discussed earlier with the indirect cost rate. And so operating revenues from each fund cover the operating expenses of those funds, and that's the day-to-day operations. We're going to accomplish that through a continued effort to manage costs and then rate increases, as we've discussed. Obviously, the district wants to build reserves. We're anticipating $970,000 of property taxes in fiscal 25-26, and we want to keep pushing as many services out to the community as possible, and that's the big change in that year over year is going to be the full coverage security, and when we say full coverage, we just mean all possible shifts are covered. So two gates, 24/7, 365, and patrol 24/7, 365. Here's the indirect cost rate adjustment, the fine tuning of that indirect cost rate. Water is going to stay the same. Wastewater is going to go down 4%. And then drainage and solid waste, as we discussed already, were very, very low. And being here for, you know, a year now, and, you know, as we refine the accounting and financial information here and looking at better data, that's really what has resulted in this. So we're looking at doing 7% to drainage and solid waste each, and then security at 12%.
So to the point that Mr. Gears raised earlier, there is no proposed increase in the allocation to water. There is a proposed decrease in the allocation to wastewater. The places that we see, as I said earlier, are drainage and solid waste, and those increases of the allocation are still covered by our 2% statutorily permitted annual increase.
Correct.
So even though the allocation's going up by 7%, in terms of the total budget for drainage and solid waste, we're only increasing the collection on those taxes by the statutorily permitted 2%?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, the 4% increase in the overhead allocation for drainage is covered by, you know, that statutory increase, as you stated.
Okay. Yes. There's one question you could ask of Patrick, and I don't know if I dreamed this or it's fact. I understood that unlike security, there was not an issue with supporting drainage with unrestricted funds, and and drainage is tax, but I thought there was an amendment or somehow the state dealt with the fact that drainage is an inherent part of water and sewer, okay, which traditionally have been the basis of a water district, but drainage is also part of that and part of the sewer system. And I just wondered if that's true, that there is now a way to treat drainage differently than you could, for example, security. Security is like police, you know, whatever you collect is whatever you're authorized to spend, unless you can come up with a fee, which we've done.
So we would, that's a discussion we can have and see. I mean, I think that would probably make things a little bit easier.
That's why I'm asking.
But yeah. John, we can supplement, and we have historically, we can supplement any one of these utilities with unrestricted funds.
Absolutely, yes. Well, so let me clarify that. So there are five enterprise funds here: water, wastewater, drainage, solid waste, and security.
Right.
And so each one of them has its own unrestricted money and restricted money. But each one of them is supposed to be treated like a separate individual business entity.
Right.
And so if there are unrestricted monies in drainage, you can use it for whatever you want in drainage. The property taxes are completely unrestricted and not tied to a specific fund here. That's why those are the monies that are the easiest for the board to allocate around.
But water and wastewater, the money that we collect from the homeowners and the businesses is the primary basis for how we fund our operations and also set aside money for reserves. That does not preclude us from taking some of the unrestricted property tax money and applying it to water.
Yes, you can use that for whatever.
What we can't do is take money collected for water and spend it on wastewater or security.
Absolutely correct.
So the water and wastewater are subject to the Prop 218 process. Drainage and security are subject to the restrictions of Measure J and the 2% annual increases.
Right.
We could, if the 2% didn't cover, as we experienced with security for a number of years, we could supplement that with unrestricted property tax money.
Yes, that's correct.
And then solid waste, theoretically, is a pass-through.
It is.
Whatever we're paying, plus a little bit of vigorish for us for the administrative overhead, is what we should be charging the ratepayer for solid waste.
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Okay. Next slide.
Yep, we'll just go. And I think these budgets, the committee members have had a chance to review these.
Okay.
And what we'll do is we'll go down to the reserve section, and then we'll talk about that. And if there's any questions on any of these specifically, then we'll open it up for your specific questions. Does that work
for
you guys?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So again,
so
this is...
You want to talk about the reserves and not the rate increases.
We discussed those at the top.
Right.
So let's go back.
Is there a slide for reserves?
Yes,
there is.
Here.
So go back one real quick. Sorry, I apologize. Just very briefly. There we go. So I just want to show, this is that balanced operating budget approach. You can see the top line here for each fund. So each one of those boxes, each one of those columns is a different fund. The rate increases for each, which we've discussed, is lined out in there. And then the first line is projected revenues at those rate increases. And then the second line is operating expenses with administrative overhead allocation. So this is the total amount of expenses that each one of these funds, each one of these enterprise operational areas would have to cover with its revenues. And so you can see the bottom line there is the net operating income that is being, that this budget is accounting for. Okay.
Razor thin.
Right.
Surplus in each of the utilities.
Yes. So I just wanted to highlight that bottom line there before we move on. So thank you, Amelia. And we'll go to the reserves tab. Okay. And so here's the reserve tab. And so this is the projections for 25-26 reserves. I think this is a good news story for the district. I think as the district gets more organized with its finances and, you know, has folks here that are building that institutional knowledge, And then providing that information to the board so the board can make informed decisions. We have the first line item here is reserve contribution. That is the $14 a month that appears on everybody's water and wastewater portion of their bill. And so those two together are about $1 million, a little over $1 million being projected. And we've got connection fees in here. These are the fees that the developers pay when they connect a new meter to the system. And this is just anticipating 15 connections. And security impact fee is the same thing. It's $1,200 per lot that comes online, per lot that's connected. That's to pay for security surveillance camera equipment. And then we've got interest and investment earnings. And what this is this is taking interest and investment earnings based on the current balance that the district has on hand of cash and investments. It's estimating a 4% increase on items that are invested in the California class and the CAMP investment pools. And it's anticipating a 3% on the district's money market account at Banner Bank. And then this is 75% of that, estimating that approximately 75% of the district's funds at any given point in time are restricted monies, and then about 25% are the unrestricted monies.
So for clarity, Mark, this particular chart represents just the amount of contribution that we will be making based on monies collected for next budget year that will go into reserves.
Yes.
What it doesn't tell us is how much total money we'll have in reserve in each of the five utility buckets. And even the allocation that you're proposing that we show for water and wastewater may be fine-tuned as you complete those additional year audits and we actually know how much reserve money is in each of our five buckets, correct?
So you're correct. The overall balances are amounts that we still have to create. And I've mentioned before, I think what we're going to need to do here is start several years ago and just rebuild what those balances should be. But the monies coming in these columns, those are based on the proper funds where those monies would come in. So what you're seeing here, $900,817 for water, if there are 15 connections and if that's the, you know, if that bears out is what the interest and investment earnings are.
Those are real-time
right.
collections that you're projecting.
Right.
For. And I had this discussion the other day with somebody in the community. And I said, look, we know we have $15 million plus in the bank. And that is both our current operating funds and our reserve funds. But we won't know until we complete the audits exactly how much reserve money and you do some additional manipulation of
right.
how money's been spent, right?
Absolutely. And then just to kind of build on that, the best part of having the balanced operating budget, which we strove for this current year, 24-25, and which we're budgeting for 25-26, if you know that your monthly operating income's coming in are at a level that they're going to cover your monthly operating expenses going out with a small surplus for contingency, that $15 million in the bank is available
for reserve.
For above and beyond projects, right? So
right.
So while it's not 100% there yet, and it's going to take a little bit because
right.
it's going to be a project to put all that together, it's better information than what's been around in the past, right? And then current year, we can tell you these are the amounts that are anticipated to come in each area, and then the property tax is there, 970 added to that.
What you just described, Mark, pardon me for interrupting,
yeah.
what you just described is the big change in what we're experiencing today versus what we experienced the last time John sat in one of these chairs and when I joined the board, because we didn't have the current budget year information. We weren't getting reports at all, and when we did, they were completely unreliable.
Yeah.
And so that's the big change over the last couple of years, is that, as you say, we know what's going on current year.
Right. Right.
We did this presentation at least three times where I participated that I'm convinced the numbers were incorrect. I was about to say made up, but...
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Incorrect. Let me ask you this.
Pulled out of thin air, so to speak.
Well, in this meeting in thin air, in other meetings maybe.
Yeah.
What I'm looking at here, okay, and let's look at gross numbers, and we haven't spread out restricted and unrestricted. There's $15 million in money that you just said, and I agree with, that as long as we maintain an equal cost and revenue, or in this case a $60,000 surplus, that $15 million is available for capital improvements of some kind, whether it be immediate repair and replacement or long term. So if we were to maintain this position, it shows me that in 5 years we can add another $13 million to that number. And it tells me that,
if we were not to spend any.
Well, yeah, right. But that's where I'm going. But then again, I can assume that we would do the same thing in the next five-year period. So that's $26 million in 10 years. So Loomis is telling us roughly that there's a short-term and a medium-term need based on their analysis of $20 million. So I guess as part of this secondary discussion that we're going to have at some point in identifying the CIP, identifying what we take in, what we add into CIP that is not in there, that we're already working on, and then we back out what we paid for in grants and what we pay for through operating expenses. In my mind, I've always thought to catch up with this, we were going to have to get into the bond market to supplement this. What it's showing me, I think, and I'm thinking out loud here, is that if we keep contributing $14 per ratepayer, we have a lot of working capital here. We just don't know. Well, we know kind of what Loomis is telling us.
Yeah, the only thing you wouldn't be able to use for any capital improvement would be whatever is specifically attributable to your water augmentation fund. That has to just go to augmenting the water supply. But that other than that, and you know, I can give you estimates of that if it gets close to where you'd be infringing on that at all, which, you know, I think you could probably go a couple of years, which by then we'll have the refined number for you. You've got a decent chunk here.
Yeah, we don't know at this point essentially what the real water augmentation number is, and that's money that is already pre-spent for development.
Well, and we'll be considering spending some of that water augmentation funding at our Wednesday meeting next week for control system adjustments for the storage tanks.
Yeah. And ultimately, beyond that, in some way, shape, or form, a large portion of what would be the cost of one or two more tanks.
Right.
Which is an inevitability, dependent, it's kind of irrelevant to what they do or they don't do. We're going to need those tanks anyway.
No, based on what I overheard at your improvements committee meeting earlier in the week, that's absolutely true. And we'll have the full board, we'll get a report from Mr. Domenichelli on his proposal in that regard Wednesday night.
So,
oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So how do we get to, or what do we have to do to get a full understanding of Loomis and existing CIP and projected repairs, which I think Loomis takes into consideration, to understand what that 5 and 10 year requirement is? I mean, I don't even want to say this, but you know, do we cover that doing what we're doing? I don't know the answer, but I didn't think we were going to, based on what Mark's telling us, unless the sky falls in or something dramatic happens, we're going to collect $26 million over the next 10-year period.
In addition to what we already have in reserve.
Right.
So you know, there's, but here, so I guess retreating back, you know, to the nightmare years, William Shearer's, I mean, it you know, like 2019 and 2021, did the lack of accurate financial information perhaps scare us to death? Or,
well, when were the $14 reserve amounts approved? Is that 2019?
It was in the 2020 budget.
2020, yeah.
It doubled. It was $7, I think, and then it bumped up.
And it doubled.
So it was definitely in that
fiscal 1920.
I think you're right.
No, understand. It was 2021, because I was here when that happened.
Yeah, understand.
That was my first budget.
Understand
cycle
when it doubled. Okay, it doubled on the back of no increase in the initial pandemic year.
Right, which was 20.
And a minimal increase in the year before. When you looked at that doubling over a 3-year period, it wasn't a doubling. But it all came at one time, and that's where the revolt came from.
Well, and we haven't increased it since then, but we have had some development. And we have had a significant increase in our interest and investment earnings.
And our property tax allocation.
And our property tax
allocation. Not only combined with the fact that you've had houses come online assessed at a, you know, $800,000 and $900,000 rate, and you have had turnover to an extent where you've captured a lot more property tax.
Right.
So, yeah, we've gone from where we were talking initially about a crisis with $675,000 in property tax to now where it's almost $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to pitch either or. I don't want to pitch that the sky is falling, and I don't want to pitch that we have no problem. But we're getting closer to, based on these numbers that we're looking at now, we're getting closer to reality of understanding where the hell we really are. And it's a revelation to me, and it's a compliment to you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to be the first one to say we didn't know what the hell we were talking about. And as you know, I think that this process, coupled with the fact that, man, if we can get those audits in our back pocket by the end of the year and kick off a new year with audits and refined numbers, there's you know,
we're light years ahead of where we were 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And you know, the other part of this reserve capital improvement augmentation discussion is we have thrown around a lot of wild numbers as they relate to development, you know, digging 1,000 feet into Bass Lake and going to Anatolia for water for $20 million and building tanks and building up pressure and taking houses out of the plan. And I don't know what all that means in terms of if the water's here and we're doing this development, is somebody going to come to a meeting and say, oh, well, this is your share? Or is it all on their back like 90-2 says it is? I mean, so, I mean, when Linda talks about a strategic plan, I think a lot of those kinds of discussions are really relevant to that. I mean, in addition to doing what we're doing financially, I think we need to at least have 4 or 5 really clear goals on what we want to, questions we want to answer.
Well, and I think there was some of that discussion that I overheard at Improvements, and that is that we're going to have to make an assessment as we make improvements to the system. Some of those improvements will benefit current ratepayers in addition to future developed ratepayers. And so one of our discussion points will have to be a very careful analysis, because I'm sure the developers aren't going to want to have to pay any more than their fair share, if you will. And so I think we may have a shot at having that discussion next Wednesday on the proposal that Joe has made, because it clearly will benefit us generally in the district, but it's also somewhat preemptive in terms of preparing for the expansion of online properties, as is the discussion about adding one or more storage tanks up on the north end.
Right. And you know, to some degree, you know, augmenting the water supply to get us to an emergency source of supply that's the equivalent of a year,
right,
is definitely a benefit to the community. And, you know, and if we're saying that that's got to come first, then so that part of it's on our back.
No, I agree. So I'm prepared to recommend that this proposed budget first draft go to the board next Wednesday.
Right.
Okay.
I don't have any additional questions today in the interest of time. Mark, unless there's anything else you need from us as a committee, or John, anything else you want to ask of Mark?
One thing, we have tried unsuccessfully for approximately 25 years to make sure the public understands that when they get a 218 notice, it is not the final budget.
Right, right. Now,
we should do something, not that it will matter, because it never works, but we...
I've been working on the Prop 218.
That's one thing, if Amelia can just review the calendar real quick, so you guys know the time frame. I'm just going to excuse myself for one quick second.
Sure, go back. Go ahead.
But I've been working on that, and it says here in big red letters...
And that's your Prop 218 draft?
Yeah, and then it says it again here, right underneath the tape. This was last year, so I'm just starting to update it. In big red letters.
This may sound dumb, but if that had a cover page with a giant stop sign on it, and below it you made the statement that you've made there in red, and you know, it doesn't have to be like an order or, you know, an insult. It can even, you know, have a little humor attached to it.
Please find the legally mandated,
right, you know, whatever
notification.
But I just would really, because it'll come out like come out on a Tuesday, and Wednesday Facebook will light up.
So because I put the 3 different notices in one envelope, and they're each a front and back, I could put one cover page for all of the enclosed notices.
Okay, a 3.5% proposed increase on water and wastewater is very, very modest.
Yeah,
you know, if it comes in even less than that, we're gravy.
Yeah, I'm not.
We're fire. As the kids say.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that we're going to have that a unpleasant experience, but I just really want to try and put to bed that, you know, this is the first pass
and your input matters.
So what was suggested, Mark, when you stepped out was maybe, because Amelia is preparing drafts for three Prop 218 notices, and if we had just a cover page, John recommends with a big stop sign symbol on it, but basically explaining that attached or enclosed are the legally mandated notices that represent the possible highest increase.
Right.
And that, in fact, when the final budget is adopted, the increases may be less, but never more than.
Right, that's correct.
It just will further mitigate. I think our community in general is in tune with this based on the experiences of the last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be very few people that are going to still be confused and assume that that means we're automatically. But again, as I was saying, just as you walked in, 3.5% increase in the base rates is really nominal. It's very modest. It's less than what Callaway says the inflation rate was, although I disagree with their number. I want to do some more research on that.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that's a great idea. And then it'll also be repeated on each of the notices.
Would it be helpful to include the sample bill? Do you have that available?
Yes. We did that last time.
Okay,
yes.
Because that is,
I
think, the biggest increase for any one combination of where you live and the services that are provided.
It's less than $7.
It's like $6.81.
Yeah, we looked at that.
And then the overall bill, I think the highest increase is 2.8%. So, 2.8%, I think, is the highest single bill increase.
Taking into account all of the...
Taking into account everything.
And,
so,
and I told you I would give it to you. I got it in, I think, it was in notebook number 3.
Okay.
I took the sample bill off the internet for like 10 years.
Okay.
And I did an analysis of the residential bill. I didn't, not the villages or anything else. I did an analysis. And it was really amazing. It, off the top of my head, I think we were, over a 10-year period, we were with 3% or less. And we had 2 years where we had a year where we did 2 years where we had no increase, and one year where the bill went down, because that was the year they were paying bonuses for making the bill go down. So.
But anyway,
and then the next year it went up 12%.
I'll give you all that information.
So would it be helpful to do a pipeline article about the rate increases and maybe talk about the sample bills, or should we leave that out of the pipeline?
I usually do that article.
I think that's a good
idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so too. And Amelia, if you would, you and Mark, collaborate, maybe check in with Mr. Enright on the wording of that cover piece. I don't want to do anything that you know is not consistent with our Prop 218 mandate. The language on the 218 notices is pretty standard. We've been using it. And if we kind of just basically repeat that, other than to say, you know, enclosed are the legally mandated.
We'll have him review everything just to make sure we're policy cure, and then I'm assuming the Amelia and I have talked about this. The barcode fee ordinance would be the same as the one before. We just changed the dates, but we'll run that by him again.
That would be part of our budget documentation.
The principal discussion through this process will not be the 3.5% increase. It will be the barcodes,
probably.
It'll be the barcodes, probably. One way or the other.
Because currently that would increase my annual cost $40 a year. And immediately I would drop the Audi that's in Boise. You know, barcode. I don't think Garrett's going to move back to Rancho Murrieta.
I don't have that problem. My kid will not put a barcode on her car.
So then the budget preparation schedule is the last thing you have in the packet, Mark, and the last thing on our agenda. And
this is more just an FYI for you guys to look at it and just get the dates and deadlines in your minds.
Yeah.
And if there's any questions or concerns about hitting these deadlines, we can discuss those or maybe change what we're doing here. But I think we're on track.
All right. And then the only other question I have about budget, when you are drafting the proposed budget, you have assumed board approval of the increases to the non-represented employee salary schedules, and also have assumed the annual increase that was given to all the rest of the employees January.
Yes, correct. Yep.
Okay.
And there's a vacation factor in there. There's a overtime factor in there. All that. It's all built in.
Okay.
Yep.
Excellent. I have nothing further, John. Do you?
No. No.
We'll adjourn the meeting then. It's 11:37 a.m.
Thanks, guys.